and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am Michael Edward Miller, and the celebration of Southern literature is going on right now in Chattanooga. It's also going to take place tomorrow, Saturday. Morris Manning is participating, and he's here in the studio for an interview. Welcome to Around and About.
Thank you.
You're a Southern writer and a poet. You've been published in The New Yorker, The Southern Review, and many other places. In 2011, you had a book of poems titled The Common Man, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in Poetry. It's a pretty impressive resume. You seem to have a distinctly Southern voice in your poetry. Tell me about your poetry, this Southern sense of place in your poems.
Well, I would say it just comes naturally. I think I do my best to try to respond to the landscape I'm from and the culture I'm from. The small town I'm from in Kentucky, which is Danville, in my lifetime is not such a small town anymore.
Oh, yes.
And it's gotten, quote-unquote, sophisticated, although perhaps by other standards it's not. But I'm sure some of this is inevitable. As one gets older, you just see the world around you changing. But I think my poetry is an attempt to express regard for kind of the independence of a small Southern community.
What are some of the changes that you're seeing, and how are those changes affecting your poetry?
Well, I've got a new book that's officially coming out next week called
Wow.
called The Gone and the Going Away. So right there, the title kind of indicates something about my recent thoughts. I believe when I was working on The Common Man, about three-quarters of the way through working on that book, I realized that, wow, the world that I'm writing about is almost vanished in the sense of kind of local characters, which anybody from a Southern town
oh, yes.
knows what that is. People who just seem not to be defined by mainstream criteria.
Would you like to read a selection from your new book that's coming out next week?
Sure. The poems in this book are set in a fictional community called Fogtown.
Is that set in Kentucky?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of my version of several Kentucky communities
okay.
all wrapped together. This is called the Fogtown School of Thought. They should have taught us birds and trees in school. They should have taught us beauty and weaving bees and had a class on listening and standing alone. The children should have studied light reflected from a spider web. We should have learned the branches of streams spread out like fingers or the veins of a leaf. We should have learned the sky is the tallest steeple. We should have known a hill is a voice inside the sky. Oh, we should have had our school on top and stayed until the night for the fog to bloom in the hollows and rise like cotton spinning off a wheel. We should have learned a dream, a child's and even still a man's, is made from fog and love. My word, you'd think, with the book in front of us, we should have learned how Fogtown got its name.
Oh, thank you very much. That's Morris Manning. He's here for the conference on, or the celebration of Southern literature, formerly the Conference on Southern Literature. How much of your own experiences growing up in a small town in Kentucky does that reflect? How much of your own satisfaction or perhaps dissatisfaction with your education?
I would say it's kind of a mixture. I think the things I learned in school, kind of official things to learn.
Yes.
Certainly had value, but I believe that poem kind of originated from just looking back and realizing the things I didn't learn in school that matter to me today, such as the names of trees and
yeah,
how to appreciate the natural world and feel part of it. That wasn't part of my official school education. It was part of my education through other sources. I was in Boy Scouts and spent all of my free time outdoors in the woods. But I really worry for young people today who I believe lack knowledge of the natural world and lack direct experience with it. So many people spend their time in a car or indoors.
Something interesting I've heard about you, you went to college in Indiana, and growing up, you were writing poetry, but you weren't really sharing it with people. You weren't really interacting with other poets. Is it true you didn't meet another living poet until you were actually in college?
That's true. Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know where you found that information, but you're exactly right. In fact, I was telling someone last night that I believe when I was in high school, I knew that I was drawn to poetry, but I thought that the last person who wrote poetry was Robert Frost or so, who died in the early 1960s. So I associated it with a bygone practice. And then when I was in college, the majority of the poets we studied in my English courses were dead men from England.
yeah.
And then one day, my professor, who was a Quaker, brought in Denise Levertov, who was still living at the time. And he brought her in not because she was a poet, but because she too was a Quaker, and they had some affiliation with each other because of interest in peace movement and things like that. So she just happened to be visiting him for reasons beyond poetry. And he brought her into our class one day, and that was the first time I saw a living poet. And something clicked in my mind, and I thought, wow, the thing I'm interested in is not bygone, and there are people still doing this, and therefore I can keep doing it too.
At what point did you decide you were going to actually do this as a living, writing poetry, teaching poetry?
Oh, it's not a living. It is, though, a center point to my life. Yes, I teach college and go to various events where I'm talking about poetry with folks, but beyond all of that, it is kind of like gravity in my life. I think about it all the time and read poetry all the time, and I read poems by people I know, many of whom are part of the Fellowship of Southern Writers, and I just enjoy being mesmerized over and over again by what someone does with words in a line on a page.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Morris Manning. He's here for the celebration of Southern literature. You're being inducted into the Fellowship of Southern Authors here in Chattanooga. That's a pretty prestigious group of authors who they're kind of headquartered here in Chattanooga. Past and present members have included Eudora Welty, Ralph Ellison, Roy Blunt Jr., James Dickey, Dorothy Allison. What does it mean to you becoming an official part of this group?
It's still sinking in. It's daunting and humbling and inspiring. All of the above. It's I gave a reading yesterday, and before my reading, I said, "The folks who are my literary heroes are in the room, and the spirits of other heroes are in the room as well." And I think Robert Penn Warren was one of the founding members of the Fellowship of Southern Writers, and he was a Kentuckian, and I feel some deep kinship with Robert Penn Warren for a variety of reasons, but and some of the other early members of the fellowship were people important to my thinking and being, and to be closer to them now,
yes,
through this opportunity is just remarkable, and I'm very grateful.
During this celebration of Southern literature here in Chattanooga, you're going to be participating in a discussion called What is Southern These Days? You'll be doing this with Roy Blunt Jr., Katori Hall, and Jane Ann Phillips. And why do you think that's a question? Why do you think there's any controversy or discussion about what is and is not Southern?
Well, I have no idea what will transpire in the conversation we have. I've tried to do some thinking about the topic, and I expect some of what I have to say will depend on what other folks bring to the table. I think perhaps it's a topic at all because we recognize that what many of us think of as the South is changing. And so it's perhaps a checking in opportunity. You know, how is the South changing? And is that change good? And if it is changing, are we losing something in the process or gaining something in the process? And I think probably underlying the topic is, you know, what is still reliably Southern?
Yes.
In the South. And my feeling about this topic is the same as I feel about poetry. A lot of people like to say, oh, poetry's falling apart and nobody
yeah.
knows what they're doing anymore and it's gone to the dogs, and that's not true. And so I think distinctive features that we associate with the South are in place and reliably there. We still have our quirky people. I often say, in a long time I've said to friends of mine who are not from the South, I've said, in the South, the strange people are allowed to walk the street. You know, out in public. The eccentric folks are out in public, and everybody, as much as intolerance is associated with the South in certain areas, I've always felt the South is remarkably tolerant of eccentric, oddball people who everybody knows, oh, well, that's so-and-so. He's the son of so-and-so and so-and-so, and he just grew up that way.
Yeah.
He's a good boy, you know.
Right. He's harmless. Don't
yes.
be afraid of him.
Yeah, it's kind of the Boo Radley
yes.
Effect.
In the South, of course, we have the very strong tradition of storytelling.
Yes.
How do you incorporate storytelling into your poetry? Because I know many of your poems are written from the point of view of a character you've invented.
Yes, well, I think I've often said that my earliest literary experience was just listening to people talk. It wasn't literature written down. But it was, in my view, literature coming out of the mouth of someone, usually a grandmother or a female member of my family. And I think instead of being a great reader as a child, I was a great listener. So I always associate poetry with the spoken voice. And it is something I try to keep in mind when I'm writing. I generally don't write a poem that's appears to be, you know, a private, mental, abstract musing.
Yes.
I try to write a poem that I could say out loud to someone, and the person listening would understand what I'm saying.
You wrote an entire book of poetry from Daniel Boone's point of view. Daniel Boone, of course, somebody very important in Kentucky history. Would you like to read one of the poems from the book?
I'd be happy to. This is called Opposition to Bridges, and it's going back a few years, but I realized that when Daniel Boone was in Kentucky, there wasn't a bridge over any river anywhere around. And so getting across a river, which he had to do many times, would have required a different sort of exertion. So this is Opposition to Bridges in the voice of Daniel Boone. If a man cannot cross a river on its own terms, then he doesn't deserve the other side. If he is loath to feel pulled down or set adrift, or so cold his lungs refuse to take in air. He's afraid to be a human water wheel. The river doesn't care if we agree with its course or the fact of its flow. The same is true for trees. We must go with their grain or else they break. All thresholds and wagon hubs and flintlock rifle stocks depend on one direction, which I call straight. Cold science has it wrong. It is a body waiting and not at rest, the root desire to move that moves a man. A bridge will take away the meaning of the river and deny the love of crossing. This is how to cross a river. Strip and breathe. Then feel the current in your bones. Forget that drowning is a word and sink.
I just think that that's such a great sentiment there. As you were saying, the idea that Daniel Boone was there in a time before civilization, before rivers, and that maybe he would even get a little offended at the idea of people needing bridges. Like, if you need a bridge, then you shouldn't be crossing in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun to imagine what Daniel Boone might have thought. I think my imagination of him is accurate in the sense that perhaps as he grew older, he grew less and less comfortable with so-called civilization and moved farther and farther away from it. I think he was very content in the wilderness.
That's Morris Manning. He's here for the Celebration of Southern Literature. It's going on in Chattanooga on Friday and Saturday. More information about the Southern Lit Conference is online at southernlitalliance.org. That's southernlitalliance.org. Thank you so much for joining us today and reading your poetry.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.